I just posted to Quora, and I've been polishing up actually a posting a few days ago. I spent all day yesterday and last night on the topic of alcoholism, not so much withdrawal, if I can pronounce that correctly, but the craving, why we crave what we know is bad for us. And I have it in two locations, one on my website and one on Quora. I might put another one on archive.org. I think I will, because I converted it into a PDF file. So the shortcut to the Quora post is is.gd/rodemi, R-O-D-E-M-I. But in case that should get used up, you know, too many people clicking on it, you can go to my website, which is vinyasi.info/health/alcoholism, and that'll take you to the webpage. It's a little lengthy, but I try to be thorough, and it's got a lot of references, so I hope you enjoy it and get something out of it, because I have a friend who's an alcoholic, and I was born of an alcoholic mother. My whole family were alcoholics. They were fasting on a raw food vegan diet back in the 50s for 10 years before I was born, because my father bought his produce, our produce, in bulk, in boxes and crates, and stored it in the garage because we didn't have a walk-in refrigerator, and he wanted to save money. So in the summertime, it fermented, and my mother became ill when every winter, every fall or winter, when winter would come. We lived in an unheated home. She had a little room heater she would tote around from room to room, and she was the housewife. She stayed at home and did the housewife thing while my father went to work. That was back in the day when we could afford to do that. And she was sick. Every winter she was more sick than the last, and she miscarried the pregnancy before me, in between my brother, my older brother and I. And the only reason why she was able to bear me was because at the end of the second trimester she broke away, started to break away from my father, and started to eat cooked food, which of course was fresh. And that raised her metabolic rate so that she could handle what spoiled raw food she was still eating. She made a lot of juice, carrot and grape juice, a lot of sugar there, and fermented, a lot of enough alcohol. And your metabolism slows down when you're fasting, and so you're more susceptible to things like alcohol or smog. And back in the 50s, we had a lot of smog. But this eating cooked food stepped up her metabolic rate. Now, my father was immune because he smoked a pipe, so he wasn't on a raw food diet. My brother and my mother and I were the only ones who were on the raw food diet. And my brother was a head shorter than his cousin. Cousin Mike was 3 weeks difference in age from my brother. My brother is 7 years older than me. And my brother was the correct weight for his age group, but the wrong height. He looked like a shrimp, a chubby little shrimp with Asian eyes because they were slit because, I don't know, he was malformed. He just wasn't growing. You know, no offense to the Asian. I'm sure he looked fine if he were normal Asian, but he wasn't. He was abnormal Caucasian. So his body features just didn't look right. The proportionalities all over in general and in his facial features just didn't look right. He was cute, but when I saw a picture of him at a birthday party, I was shocked. Because he was so much shorter than he should have been. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was uncanny, and nobody noticed. You know, 10 years went by, and he didn't like his diet at all. He'd swap his lunches at school, and he'd scarf down hot dogs when he would go to his friends' birthday parties. So it was really bizarre. And then my mother, the gynecologist who was acting as the neonatal care or the naturopath, I think she had a naturopathic doctor attending her prenatal care, and this doctor told her, hey, look, you got to change your diet. You know, the last one didn't make it. You know, at 6 months, you miscarried. You're at 6 months. You better change your diet if you want to have this carry this to term. And so she did, and she did. But see, my teeth are all, besides the fact they're yellow, they're small, they're crooked, and my jaw is tiny. My liver is malformed at birth, along with my adrenal glands. My heart's okay and my brain's okay, but my body isn't there to back me up when I need it. I've had to do extensive exercise to compensate, but that was back in the day when I used to exercise, but now I have injuries. I can't exercise very readily. And I had to become a vegetarian because I was so sickly as a child. So we separated from my father. We went to my grandma's house, and we went back to a standard American diet. My brother and my mother loved it. They were scoffing down meat, red meat, like it was the best thing since sliced bread. And I was getting sick, and I couldn't chew the stuff either. The only thing I could eat was salad. I could eat salad, milk, I could drink that, and cookies, because they were soft. And that was it. I couldn't eat anything. So they gave me ground round, and I couldn't stand it. I would have liked fish without the bones. I was paranoid about bones getting caught in my throat. I had a lot of saliva. I had a very strong swallowing ability to make up for my lack of chewing, I guess. Oh, and my mother had no milk, no breast milk for me. Unlike my brother, she did have breast milk for him. And he was at the beginning of the diet when they were undergoing transition. So they were still eating cooked potatoes at the time. So while he was gestating with her, he didn't have to suffer his prenatal development, pre-birth development. It was only when he was growing up after birth that he suffered. But he grew out of it because he was 10 years old when we separated from my father. I, on the other hand, had it backwards, the other way. I grew up under a standard diet and was sickly because I couldn't handle it because I hadn't formed properly in my mother's womb. So I had to become a vegetarian, a vegan, for 35 years, and I made the mistake of not taking B12, so my nervous system did deteriorate. Now that's not a problem, I know better. And I'm not a vegan, I eat a little eggs, not too much, but I can't handle dairy. And I really don't like flesh food, not even fish. And I take all these supplemental protocols, and this is one of them I bumped into 10 years ago, and I didn't know what sense to make of it. And I basically have a channel on YouTube called DMSOI, you know, the acronym for it's DMSO plus I, DMSO plus iodine, because I found a way to combine the two and take it using water purification tablets and not get an upset stomach like you normally do when you drink Lugol solution. And this has always been a problem, and I solved the problem. You combine it with DMSO, and I figured out the procedure, and I made all the various mistakes I tried to make in order to figure out what the limits were of the recipe. And so I decided when it came to me a few nights ago, because I have this friend of mine who's an alcoholic, I thought, you know, what can I do to help, you know? I don't know what to do, and all I can do is just be there with him and put my arm around his shoulders and make him feel I care and that he's loved, and, you know, that's all I can do. But now I can do more. I have a solution. What I did was I adapted the DMSOI recipe to chlorine, substituting in place of the water purification tablets Clorox. And I worked out this morning that I can take it as high as 4 drops orally, swirled with a little distilled water, and then you add half a tablespoon of DMSO and swirl for 3 minutes, and you have to use a certain container. You can't use plastic because you get god-awful sick. It's no different than silicone leaky breast syndrome, and you have to use DMSO to get it out of you since you use the DMSO to put it into you. So you always have to use either glass or metallic or wooden utensils. You can use Teflon. I have a file on my on both articles, both locations of the articles, the link, it's the last link, the 28th link, of safe materials. Teflon, and there's another one, I think polypropylene, but I would chance plastics, basically. Teflon, I knew, was okay because the underside of the bottle, the glass bottle you get DMSO in, is a Teflon underside. That's the standard glass bottle that you buy. The underside of the cap, not an eyedropper bottle, but a regular storage glass bottle for chemicals and whatnot and essential oils. The underside, meeting up with the liquid of whatever you put in the bottle, is Teflon. And Teflon is an amazing property. Even I won't get into its electrodynamic properties, but for storing foodstuffs, it's pretty good. And it's about the only safe plastic-like material you can use with DMSO. So I get my DMSO in glass bottles. I don't get it in anything else. And I try to use, I make sure I use only glass pipettes or eyedroppers to transfer the Clorox, to the, even though I'm taking it out of a plastic, Clorox comes in a plastic jug, but whatever. You don't want DMSO to touch plastic and then touch your body. even your skin, because you'll absorb the plastic, you'll absorb the artificial dyes. It's very dangerous. DMSO is so strong a solvent, it's stronger than ethanol, vodka. It's the strongest solvent that I think we know of. It's stronger than alcohol, and alcohol is a strong solvent by comparison to water. So this is the power of DMSO. Then it also has this ability to weakly bind with lightweight molecules and atomic elements, such as halogens, and carry it across all the tissue structures of the body, even the blood-brain barrier, everywhere. And within minutes, it's everywhere within your body. And it also targets cancer cells and leaves the, if it's bound to a chemical that's toxic to cancer, like chemo or this other chemical I don't remember the name of, it'll leave your normal cells alone and go straight to the cancer and kill the cancer. It's amazing, this DMSO stuff. And yet the medical profession, the FDA is, I'm sure it's a cartel of lobbyists who have made sure that to the advantage of the pharmaceutical industry, DMSO is mothballed. And it's been, I think, that way for the last several decades, since the 60s, when Dr. Stanley Jacob first discovered the beneficial properties of DMSO. Even though all the literature says otherwise, FDA just makes excuses and drags its feet and you know, wipes its hands of any culpability while it is mothballing DMSO. So you can't expect your doctor to prescribe it for you, unless you're a lucky soul who meets up with the right fellow who's already done his homework, because the standard doctor is given the standard spiel that it's not control tested, and it's questions about your eye popping out, and it's bogus. All of it is bogus. Yet they'll make any excuse possible to prevent the doctor from making use of the stuff, because it's amazing stuff. The pharmaceutical industry would go out of business. Because imagine, the cost effectiveness of using a homeopathic dilution of a drug, because that's literally about, you know, what you do when I, you know, like four drops of Clorox, you know, is going to treat my whole body. Well, yeah, because it's bound to DMSO and it'll take it everywhere. And how much do you need, really? You just have to make sure it gets into you, because you normally, when we sterilize ourselves with tap water, it's skin deep, right? It just meets out with surfaces, and then even if you drink tap water, it interacts with your stomach acids and breaks down. But DMSO gets it right across. You could hold it in your mouth and absorb it and spit it out. You don't even have to swallow the stuff if you don't want to. You could put it on the backside of your hand and absorb it, you know, not the underside, because that doesn't absorb very well, but the backside of your hand or your wrist, your forearm. You know, that's how I tested things in the beginning. Would I spray things on my belly, on my, you know, bare skin belly, to see how my body would react. And if it reacted favorably, then I'd try to wet my lips, then I'd try to put it in my mouth and hold it. Only then, if I could hold it in my mouth, take it to the back of my mouth at my throat, if that was okay, if my throat didn't get irritated, then I knew it was okay and safe for me. Because I was a little scared too, like anybody can be skeptical, you know, cynical, skeptical, doubting, you know, cautious. You know, we don't want to poison ourselves with something new. But, you know, there are ways of getting around that, and you slowly work your way into it. You can make very dilute homeopathic dilutions and work your way up, doubling or multiplying by 10 until you reach, you know, a value that you think is acceptable. And that's what I was doing here. I started with one drop of Clorox, and I tried four this morning, and it's much better results. And half a tablespoon of DMSO and one tablespoon of lemon juice. And there's a whole procedure you follow. You got to swirl the four drops of Clorox with the, let's say, an ounce or two of distilled water in a coffee mug or a glass beverage container, not a plastic one. I prefer to use a coffee mug because it's just the right size, and you got a nice handle, grip it there while you're gently swirling. And then you add the half tablespoon of DMSO. And now DMSO is very unstable. And then you swirl it for 3 minutes. You set your timer. And then you add a tablespoon of lemon juice for flavor, because DMSO is can be a little weird. Not when it's fresh. But I haven't used my stockpile of DMSO for quite some time, and it tastes pretty bad because it's unstable. It breaks down even at room temperature. It has very narrow range as it is, between 65 degrees and 85 degrees. And outside of that range, it's going to freeze or it's going to break down if it goes above 85 very rapidly. But it'll break down anyway, slowly, even within that range. And when it does so, you still are left with a good deal of DMSO, but now you've got MSM, which stabilizes it, so it's actually a good idea to add MSM to your DMSO right away when you buy it, because that helps stabilize it and it helps prevent it from breaking down, but it's still going to break down. And then the other thing you get when it breaks down is DMS, and that's what lends the bad, foul odor. It may turn that way inside your body, or it may do that in long-term storage or the wrong temperature storage. And it's not bad. It won't kill you. It just stinks and tastes awful. So the lemon juice helps. Now, it has to be lemon juice. You can't use orange juice, can't use apple juice, because there's too much sugar and not enough citric acid. And I found that out when working with iodine. When the iodine turns black, you know you made a mistake. It has to be brown. And so I learned from that, and I just apply what I learned to chlorine without thinking twice, because I already did my homework. So all I'm doing now is applying now DMSO to a different halogen, because chlorine is a stronger sterilizing agent than is iodine. So 10 years ago, that was nice for iodine to be able to drink Lugol's without getting an upset tummy, but chlorine is stronger. And that's why we don't use iodine in our tap water. We use chlorine. There's a reason. But we don't use as much chlorine as we used to. We've reduced the chlorine content, and we've added ammonia to stabilize it. And that sucks. It saves them money. But when you don't have an excess of chlorine that is capable in its excess quantity to convert available ammonia into free nitrogen gas, inert nitrogen gas, you don't have enough chlorine in the tap water. I got to tell you this. This is a mistake that the EPA has allowed this to occur. But everything is going downhill over the last 30 years. It's just deteriorating. The quality of life, the professionalism is lacking. We put all our attention on digital electronics and wow. But basic things, Eric Dollard has been complaining about, the electric grid has been deteriorating, is undergoing a process of sabotage. The pole transformers outside our homes are being shorted out with jumper cables. It's amazing the deterioration that's occurring. Well, it's the same thing in our tap water. Since the 1980s, this has been going on across the country, slowly but surely. And it's hideous because they're reducing the level of chlorine in the tap water, saying, well, there's a cancer scare. We don't want to give you cancer. But you're reducing the ability for the water to sterilize stuff. It's amazing. And then we're putting ammonia in the water. That's swamp water. We're bathing ourselves with sterilized swamp water. I mean, it makes no sense. Normally, ancient cultures, you drain the swamp before you occupy it and build a town there. You know, ancient Greece, I think they did that in one location, a certain Greek city in ancient Greece. You know, one of the ancient civilizations back then. They drained the swamp. Hey, we like this place, but we don't like the swamp. So we drained the swamp, and now we can live there. So I noticed in 1984, when we were putting ammonia in the tap water in L.A., in Los Angeles, certain sewers in certain neighborhoods, because they were sluggish, they didn't drain properly, they started stinking like crazy. It was my normal route to go to like a health food store. I drive by there, and all of a sudden it started stinking like rotten eggs. It's like, oh my God. Then you know you got something weird going on. That's hydrogen sulfide. That's not the same thing as DMS. You don't want to mess with hydrogen sulfide. That's cyanide similar to cyanide poisoning. You don't want that. But we have it in various areas of our environment. And inside the physiology, that's what causes us to get white hair prematurely, is the hydrogen sulfide in our colon going into our bloodstream and bleaching our hair and aging us prematurely. So it's really across the board. We're deteriorating our quality of life. It's amazing. So some of us are attempting to push the envelope and try to improve things and make improvements. Even though we know better, nobody's asking us for advice on fixing the problems of the world. So we continue to have problems. Common sense would dictate not to do that. But popular sense, which is not healthy sense, is to look at the bottom line. Oh, I'm saving money. Oh, good. That's all I care about. And I'm not dead yet. See? There's nothing wrong. Oh, good grief. So look for the links in the bottom of this email. or yeah, I mean in the bottom of this video, and enjoy your life.